Welcome to week two of Stat 209. We're working from the web page, which is already posted, and the PDF lecture file 21lect2.pdf, labeled like we have it before. I'm David Ragosa again, and where we start out on page one is just a version of our web page marked up a little bit to give you a little bit of carryover from last week, and there's a couple of things I added that I should say something about. So week one, we did encouragement designs and mediating variables, and we had a couple of questions about just what's all this stuff on the web page. And it's a variety of priorities. The real priority is the lecture and the core materials, such as class handouts and data examples, that are both in the lecture and linked on the web page. There are lots of other things linked, both for background and enrichment values, and part of it is a generational thing. I grew up having to actually go to a library at 10 p.m. at night to get a basic reference that I needed. So I have always been, since I had the first web page on this campus 25 years ago, erring in linking lots of stuff that could be of use. And there is a purpose to that. I try to demarcate. We have primary readings and additional resources for most things. And the purpose of the additional resources is really to provide you with some later on. Students often want to come back to the materials in the course when they really need to know a topic, such as in their own research or in consulting with others. And there are some of the core readings, some of the statistical background that may well be of use in their own activities or that of others that they are advising. So there's more stuff than you need for an introduction always posted. Also, the research examples I use, I always post the full article. We pull off what we need to tell the story in lecture, but if it were an area of your interest, whether it be social science or life science, and there's attempt to have examples covering both, that's great. You may want to read the core paper or sometimes the journalistic summary of the paper. Both are sometimes useful. And so we have a variety of things, but the core things that you should pay attention to are the core items in lecture. Lecture sometimes does some advanced topics, but the core handouts. Handouts really form the spine of the course. And data analysis examples. Review questions are mostly reiterating things we did in lecture, but sometimes, like problem two of week one, go a little further and do a little bit of enrichment. So lecture, the core handouts and links, and the review questions are the things to pay most attention to. And naturally, you don't have to worry about an in-class exam. So the problem set, when it's posted later on, do it the last day we are allowed to take things, the last day of classes the university will define. We'll be open book, so you can come back. Of course, it's open everything, and you can come back and look at any of the things you might feel you need additional familiarity with, i.e. you can catch up. So there is more than you need here. That's a good thing, I think, but don't be overwhelmed by it. And I got some questions on that, and I understand that. It's always been the case. I link things that are useful. Not everything that's useful needs to be digested in your first pass on these materials, or even your second pass. So that's where we are. We have all our research examples. We have postings for, but the lecture is the core. So that's, hopefully I covered that and gave people some direction. So in week one, we started out, and you can see we went through both data analysis examples and research examples. under mediation, which was our second part, I want to come back. I found the bench science example, irisin, exercise and Alzheimer's, that I couldn't find before. It was in front of my face, of course. So I want to come back and do that because that's quite useful. And just say a word about the review questions for week one. I'm on page 2 of the PDF or on the web page. Question 1 is just trying out some of the mediation packages or doing Baron Kenny by yourself. Question 2 is a little bit of an enrichment question, generating some data. And so it's good to look at how we did it. I did it very basic. There's more elegant ways of doing everything, of course. And then try to take a look at some of the packages and some of the results. Basically, the fancy packages still do Baron Kenny. And question 3 is one I added, and this was the actual Sesame Street evaluation data, which is on Gilman's site in Columbia. And we want to take a look at, and I think this one is one to concentrate on, we have numbers, just to have a different outcome variable than the letter outcome we use. We used improvement on letters in the class example. And looking at the two ways you might estimate these things, and especially the assumptions required. The instrumental variables estimation requires that there be no influence on the encouragement to view Sesame Street on the outcome variable other than through increasing viewership of Sesame Street. So you have to argue that being given information saying how important your child's cognitive development is, 0 to 6, and how that will pave the way to a successful life, doesn't cause you to do anything else, like read to your kid more, etc. It just causes you to turn on Sesame Street. That's a tough sell. And then the path analysis approach says that there's no effect delta, and that we went through in some detail. I won't try to make that argument here. Both are pretty tough, but it's good to understand, even though encouragement designs are a wonderful thing, you gotta justify them when you're trying to get at dose response. And you can't assign to dose using this indirect encouragement. You have to use some substantive knowledge to justify the way you go about the statistical analysis. So there's two ways of going about it, as Holland lays out. The IV is what probably people automatically go to. That's a very tough sell, both in the SALT example and I think here, but take it into account and look at using IV reg to use it, and look at the path analysis also, the regression approach. And so that's, I think, a real good question to emphasize. Okay, so now back to the example on PDF page 2, the bench science versus path analysis, exercise and Alzheimer's. And we have a New York Times article, How Exercise May Help Keep Our Memory Sharp, and we have the actual publication from 2019 in Nature Medicine, for real stuff. And what this is going to show us is mediation is a wonderful question, the question why. Exercise, more exercise seems to be helpful in reducing the cognitive decline in Alzheimer's and generally the onset of Alzheimer's. Why does that happen? Is there some explanation and some intermediary? And the idea is irisin, which we'll come to, or ricin. In real class, we have the always have somebody from the medical school who can tell me how to pronounce things, but FNDC5 or ricin rescues synaptic plasticity. Plasticity is a real good thing. Memory defects are something you don't want. So PDF page 2, let's go through this. And this is going to be a wonderful example of what you'd really like to do mediation. It's not regression adjustments, it's actual bench science. And so let's go through that as a final example on mediation. So PDF page 4 is the New York Times write-up Petroff and Good. It's not Gina Colata, who's a friend of this department, but Gretchen Reynolds, who did this. So, Ricin, hormone release during exercise may improve brain health and lessen the damage that occurs during Alzheimer's. This is Nature Medicine. We did it in mice. And, of course, a dictum of medical research is that monkeys exaggerate and mice lie. And that said, that's Perl would call that transportability. In regular social science, we call that generalizability. Something we figure out in mice doesn't apply to human. Monkeys exaggerate, mice lie. Well, but we're still gonna go ahead. At least we learned something about mice. Okay, exercise protects our brains and possibly preserve memory and thinking skills, especially in Alzheimer's. Okay. So, epidemiological research indicates that being physically active reduces the risk for Alzheimer's disease and other dementias and may also slow disease progression. So let's say we assign people to high and low exercise and then look at their cognitive decline, or sometimes it's an observational study. But let's take the point of view of an actual randomized controlled trial. The why question, the mediation or process question, is, how is it that exercise alters the inner workings of the brain and produces this good result, keeping plasticity? Whether the results are changes elsewhere in the body also happen to be good for the brain, or whether the changes actually occur within the brain. So we're trying to understand the process. Let's say we got an RCT result. More exercise improves, protects against dementia. We want to know why. That's a mediation question. So there's a hormone called ricin, first identified recently, less than 10 years ago, produced by muscles during exercise. The hormone jumpstarts multiple biochemical reactions throughout the body, energy metabolism. Okay, PDF page 5. Exercise might be helping to protect brains by increasing levels of ricin. Maybe that's the mediation hypothesis here. And they found ricin in the brain. Gene expression patterns suggest much of this ricin had been created in the brain itself. So that answers one question. Levels of hormone were especially high in the brains of people who were free of dementia when they died. But you didn't have any of the brains who died with Alzheimer's. Okay. Researchers turned to mice, some healthy and others bred to develop a rodent form of Alzheimer's. Again, are mice lying to us here? We don't know. They infuse the brains of animals bred to have dementia with a concentrated dose of ricin. Those mice soon began to perform better on memory tests and show signs of improved synaptic health. So if you gave someone with dementia a ricin, someone, a mouse, that improved things. Exercise wasn't a factor. Then they took brains of healthy animals and didn't allow them to produce a ricin, gave them Alzheimer's. Then without any ricin, the brains of once healthy mice showed signs of worsening memory and synapses. Now here's the real bent science manipulation that shows you about mediation. Healthy mice work out swimming for an hour almost every day for 5 weeks. Don't we all wish we could do that these days? Beforehand, some of the animals were also treated with a substance that blocks ricin. So you've got mice that were exercising but couldn't produce ricin, so they got all the other benefits of exercise. If you didn't get that blockage, ricin levels in the brain blossomed during the exercise training and after the brains were exposed to Alzheimer's causing amyloids, they seemed to fight off its effects. So, if you're allowed to exercise, you got more ricin, and you did fine even when you were exposed to Alzheimer's madness. The animals that were unable to create ricin did not benefit from exercise. After exposure, they performed about as poorly as sedentary. So, the effect of exercise doesn't seem to exist if you can't produce ricin. So exercise may protect against dementia by triggering an increase in the amount of ricin. You've actually been able to manipulate the pathway. Unlike trying to do a regression analysis over lots of mice, you actually get to manipulate. If you can't produce ricin, exercise doesn't help you. If you get lots of ricin, even without exercising, you have a good result. that's pretty clear and a mediating variable. The experiments use mice, so cannot tell us if exercise and orexin will work similarly in people. Mice can lie. But you may start giving people orexin as a treatment for dementia, and animals not. Okay, so that's the New York Times write-up. That pretty much laid it out. Here is, on PDF page 7, the Nature Medicine. I won't go through the writing is far more formal, but for example, the arrow on PDF page 7 shows you, showing that orexin is an important mediator of the beneficial effects of exercise in Alzheimer's models, our findings place orexin as a novel agent capable of opposing synapse failure and memory impairment in Alzheimer's disease. So we have a variety of things. PDF page 8 shows you the synaptic plasticity results, and bottom of that PDF page 8, orexin mediates protective actions of physical exercise and synaptic plasticity and memory in AD models. That is, it gets in between exercise and the cognitive decline outcome. Physical exercise, PDF page 9, has previously shown to induce memory-related events in the brain and is proposed as an approach to reduce the risk of AD. Give people exercise, potentially bringing about significant benefits. Many efforts to identify the endogenous molecules responsible for the beneficial effects of exercise are underway. And this is this one. And so our findings suggest, PDF page 10, that FDI orexin could comprise an attractive novel therapy aimed at prevent dementia in patients at risk, as well as delay its progression in patients at later stages, including those who can no longer exercise. So if you're somewhat bedridden by various age-related things, maybe orexin is your only path. Finding the mediating variable may well replace the need to exercise. Many patients with dementia are disabled due to age-related conditions. Therefore, the development of alternative approaches that build on the beneficial effects of exercise in the brain may benefit those patients. Orexin, novel mediator of the beneficial effects of exercise. This is a great success of mediation questions in observational studies, or when we don't have bench science, it's a lot tougher, as we've seen, but this is a great research example. It is achievable. Okay, now on page, PDF page 11, or on your web page in your browser, we now are at the week 2 agenda. And PDF page 11 starts us out with a marked up version of the agenda. Moderating variables, the other M word, mediating and moderating. And these are quite different, and that's why we tried to take them up different. But you'll see a number of readings, our chapters, our mediation and moderation. Well, as long as you keep them separate, you can say them together. This is heterogeneous treatment effects. There's a new word, acronym, C-A-T-E, for conditional average treatment effect. We'll come back to that. Our lecture topics are, we're going to try to take up where we left off on week 1, mediation and moderation and combinations thereof. Remind you how we're looking at average treatment effects and extensions thereof. Then we're going to come back and look at analysis covariance. Make sure, I think in the fall quarter you did a good bit of that, so we'll review that and go through just some almost that 60 level stuff just to get us going. We'll use high school and beyond because it's a famous data set, even though it's an observational study. We'll compare private schools and Catholic schools, school means, which is something we'll come to in unit 2 also, just as an example because I have used it in the past. And then formally into moderating variables and heterogeneous treatment effects. And the idea is we'll analyze treatment effects as a function of the covariant. No longer have a constant treatment effect for all levels of the moderating variable, whether it be age, IQ, ability, and goes back to things I did 40 some years ago, which are now implemented in various R packages. I called it comparing non-parallel regression lines. That's why I call it CNRL. And that's both pick-a-point procedures and Johnson Naaman technique. Johnson Naaman technique goes back to the 1930s. Jerzy Naaman, also founder of the Naaman-Rubin-Holland model for potential outcomes. Naaman 1918, I believe. This is Johnson. Palmer Johnson was an educational psychologist, Minnesota, I believe. And we have implementations of that. And we have data and data analysis linked. And we have a number of handouts walking us through the statistical formulation. Primary readings, the old paper I have, there's newer versions of writing up the same thing, including in the R resources that you can take a look at, but I'm going to walk through the analysis there so we can do it by hand. In the review questions, we'll come back and use some of the R packages. I'm apprehensive about that. Hopefully they don't do it wrong, and then we need to tell them that. People don't like to hear it, so we'll check that with our examples later on. We have a number of research examples, gender differences in effectiveness of aspirin and blocking clotting. Maybe in women, aspirin doesn't work so well, maybe in men it does. That's the idea of a moderating variable. The effectiveness of a treatment, in this case aspirin, depends on gender. And we have publication, Annals of Pharmacology. A more fun one with some Garth Brooks music. Moderating variables can be your friend, although it's an observational study. We'll see, it's not a very good one, but it's a fun topic. Why smart people are better off with fewer friends. Turns out having lots of friends overall increases your happiness, but that depends on IQ, and the difference they find goes away for high ability people. So how intelligence, population density, and friendship affect modern happiness. So apparently PhDs shouldn't have posses, is the way I would say it, I think. And then third is aptitude treatment interaction research, which is a famous part of psychology and education. What treatments work best for what people? Treatments in this case often be curriculum, advanced math versus drill and practice. And that was an area Lee Krumbach and Dick Snow worked a lot on. There's a number of books, and I linked one paper, and we'll look at some examples of that. So those are our three examples: aspirin, friendship, and assignment to remedial versus advanced courses, let's say. We have a number of our implementations. Package Probe Mob, we have the manual that does pick a point and Johnson Naaman, just like I said. Package Interactions has a number of documents, a quick intro, a vignette, and the word interaction you'll see a lot. I regard interaction as an empty word. It just means it depends. What you really want to know is what kind of people benefit most. Just saying there's an interaction is only the lead sentence. It is not the whole statement. You really want to be able to explain that. And that's going to be our spirit. For what kinds of people benefit most? That's what we really want to know. Not just there's differences. So we have the manual, we have a vignette, and we have an intro for package interactions. You can take a look at those. And in the review questions, we'll use the packages. I'm just going to do things by hand here. And then additional resources for those who have some statistical background or want to look further. Paul Rosenbaum, which may have been paper used even fall quarter, David Cox, and William Cochrane, three of the biggest deal statisticians we've had in the last 150 years, all write about analysis covariance. And then the Johnson-Naaman technique, there's lots of examples, the regions of significant criterion differences or regions of significance. And we will come and show you how to compute those. Trait treatment interactions often used instead of aptitude treatment interaction in personality research. But it's the same, it depends kind of thing. For what kinds of people are different protocols more effective? And I have two review questions posted so far. I'm on PDF page 12. I just analyzed covariance review, and of course that's not necessary for some of you. And then doing another comparing regressions paper with some play data, demonstration data, some Venables and Ripley, just to give them credit for creating S plus and then R in the MASS library. it's a good thing to know your history and our. And so question two walks you through just another example besides the in-class example of doing computations for Johnson-Neyman and pick a point. And that's PDF page 13. So I have all the review questions. So now just to pick up where we were, the basic RCT gives you an average treatment effect. And if you look, this is page, PDF page 14. If you look ahead at PDF page 15, I just put in a slide from when I was doing these expositions from start. The average treatment effect, the ATE, just to remind you of it, and that's what we're trying to, once we get that, then we're trying to ask harder questions, whether it be the why question, which is mediation, or the moderation question, is the ATE a good description for everyone? So it's the expected gain from treatment versus control for a randomly selected unit from the population. That not may not be representative of other subgroups in the population. Part of way, one way of thinking of moderating variables is what we call subgroup analysis in a lot of public health and life sciences. That's the average causal effect. That was Paul Holland's term for it, the ACE. So it's the ATE. And then another popular measure, in part because it's what comes up naturally in some econometric methods, whether it be inverse probability weighting or instrumental variables, the average treatment effect on the treated, which is evaluated at the mean of the people that self-selected into treatment in an observational study and a randomized controlled trial, the treatment mean and the overall mean are going to be just about identical, so there's really not a distinction. In observational studies, of course, it can be a big difference. People that chose job training versus people that avoided it are quite different people. Same with medicine, self-selecting into medication or surgery. So back to page 14. The ATE, or the ACE, in STAT 60, we could get it at the t-test. We'll also look at increasing precision using a concomitant variable X with ANCOVA. That was Fisher's original purpose, or blocking. If you blocked on X before assignment, you're getting the same increase in precision. Pulling variation out of the error term and into something identifiable gives you greater precision. And so we will look at that, and we'll look at basically how the t-test regression, Y on G regression, where G is your group indicator, Y tilde G, gives you the difference of means. We'll actually even go back and review that. So in the little pictures on the top frame of page 14, Y and G, you can have two different G0, 1, so you have those different scatter plots. Or with a variable X, you have a line for G equals 1 and a line for G equals 0. Assume they're parallel in an ALIS covariance, which assumes a constant treatment effect, or they may be non-parallel in the case of interactions or the existence of a moderating variable. And there can be an ordinal or disordinal interaction. These are things I usually draw on the board. We'll come back to them. Ordinal interaction means that one treatment is always better than the other over X, even if the different distance between the lines varies. Disordinal means they cross, in which case for some X's, one treatment is better than another, and that's reversed for other values of X, say ability or age. So mediation goes beyond the ATE and asks why, like in the Alzheimer's example. Moderation, or the conditional average treatment effect, regards there being individual differences in response to the intervention, i.e. heterogeneous treatment effects, but something that you can speak of systematically. And if you wanted to ask whether high-ability people have a different level of value from the treatment than low-ability people, you could pick group means and do pick a point on subgroups, or you could do a Johnson-Neyman region of significance, which is going to answer the question, for what region of X, or what regions of X, are there significant differences between the treatments, i.e. what kinds of people benefit? The average treatment effect says whatever you get for the mean difference, it pertains to everyone. That may not be more. And then, of course, we talked about mediated moderation and moderated mediation. These really are things people care about, and we saw some examples. individual differences in mediation. So a moderated mediation means that the mediating variable might depend on males versus females, the moderating variable. And a mediated moderation might mean that the moderating effect, say gender differences, depends on a third variable, might be some biochemical difference between males and females. And so there might be a reason why there's moderation. So you can have those, and people talk about those. We saw that in Red Shoes effect, but at least we'll try to get the basics down before we freeze our brains with more complicated things. Those are pretty hard things to assess, but you'll hear about them. So that's PDF page 14, picking back up. So moderation is our purpose. We saw the average treatment effect, PDF page 15. And now I just wanted to pull out, because it is kind of a nice, although as with everything on the internet, there can be things that are incorrect, but this is one little textbook chapter I posted on PDF page 16. I posted for week one, mediation and moderation, because she tries to do a good job of explaining things. And so mediation, and it has some good R examples in it, so I would commend it if you want to do some additional poking around. Poking around is encouraged, your graduate students especially. That's research is poking around. And so this course tries to facilitate that without requiring it. So on PDF page 16, we have mediation analysis test a hypothetical causal chain where one variable X affects the second variable M, and in turn that variable affects a third variable Y. So exercise, ricin production, and cognitive functioning was our X, M, and Y in the wonderful Ben Science example, intermediary variables. And then she goes on and explains people with higher incomes tend to live longer, PDF page 17, but this effect is explained by mediating influence of having access to better health care. Well, whether or not that's true, that's a mediating example. And here's a statement, just to review mediation, conducted two ways, Barron and Kenny, or the mediation package. I put a little circle in there. They're the same thing as we saw in the review questions. The mediation package dresses it up in a lot of potential outcomes language and extends it to harder models like survival analysis or logistic regression, but it's basically the same thing. So it's not two different ways, two different guises, I guess I would nominate on PDF page 17. Moderation analysis, which is where we're going, also allows you to test for the influence of a third variable on the relationship between X and Y. Moderators can strengthen, weaken, or reverse the nature of a relationship, that is, disordinal interaction. For example, academic self-efficacy, confidence in one's own ability to do well in school, I'm sure you all have lots of that, moderates the relationship between task importance and the amount of test anxiety a student feels. You can have too much anxiety, you can have too little. Self-efficacy is considered a moderator because it interacts with task importance. Okay, moderator IV here, okay. And then there's mediated moderation, blah, blah, blah. So she tries to do a good introduction, has examples, and I thought I'd point that out for a minute or two. It's trying to get people there. So we have three research examples, and I think I'll pause here and make this part A, and then come back and start the research examples on moderation.